15 of the top 20 positions.
Incredible.
But they weren't all World of Watches. They were feeder pagers. They were about TagHeuerWatches.com and about WatchRepair.com and all kinds of things like that. But,
so Ken was already using that strategy of feeder pages.
Actually, that's one strategy that yours truly was working on before I ever met Ken, because when I got Stefan's book, you know, and I really focused on the redirect pages. To me, that seemed like, you know, really cool, because now we could have a website called Tag Heuer Watch Information, and anybody searching for Tag Heuer Watches, you know, that page should, you know, have a better chance of coming up high than World of Watches, and doesn't mention Tag Heuer.
Mm-hmm.
Tag Heuer was our biggest biggest line, about 45% of our business. So, in those days, so yeah, I had our previous web guys working on a couple of redirect pages. We had a couple of them up, and then when Ken came on board and we started talking about search engines, he said, "Yeah, that's one of the key things that you have to do." So we had under Ken's tutelage, and not tutelage, but doing the work. We had, I believe, 13 feeder pages, you know, all of our top watch brands, plus about watch repair, about watch brace, about watchbands.com, you know, all these different ones that Ken said, you know, you have to lose the focus on just the vendor and the word watches and, you know, what other terms do people search for. So, you know, with Ken, we got, you know, watch repair and all that kind of stuff. And these were very early sites where, you know, Ken knew right from the start, you know, content, and our strategy behind a site like About Watch Repair was to get, you know, a watch repair expert to write a new column or article each month or every couple of weeks that we could put in there and, you know, keep the content fresh, you know. Unfortunately, with the business growing like it did, you know, didn't have a lot of time to work on a lot of other niceties, like finding somebody to write a column for one of your pages, you know. So that one sort of, you know, it was a great idea, and it would have worked if we'd had the time and energy to do it. But
hey, Bob, as far as you know, was World of Watches Ken's first stab at an e-commerce retail site?
No. Okay. No, because Ken already had the security products at the time.
Oh, really? He was doing that way back when.
I think I have it. I'll preface my remark.
Okay.
I think I have a distinct memory of Ken discussing the security devices at our first time we went to dinner that night.
Like pepper spray.
Yeah.
And okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. But I think that's the only thing he had. I don't think he did their shopping cart or anything like that. That was not a database driven site. I mean, our site was, you know, I guess quite sophisticated for its day, and you know, sort of a pain in the neck because it was so heavily, you know, database driven. But I think Ken was looking for that, you know, that kind of challenge.
Now, you after working with Ken and you know, getting the results from his industry, basically. You hooked him up with other retailers or other fledgling e-commerce entrepreneurs.
Yes, when we sold World of Watches, of course, we weren't looking to do any of that while we still had World of Watches.
Right, exactly.
We took up most of Ken's time on that and knew it.
When did you guys sell World of Watches?
In June of 2000.
Okay, and that's when Ken stopped doing the pages. And
he stayed on working for the new owners for a while.
Okay.
And they're you know, their strategy was different. Their strategy was more let's do a pay per click kind of thing, and you know, that's the direction they went. So,
if somebody wanted to track Ken's work on World of Watches, it pretty much petered out in 2000.
That's the interesting thing.
Yep.
Okay, it gets me in another interesting topic.
Okay.
If you search watches today on Google, World of Watches comes up number one. I mean, it's not a paid listing, but you know, World of Watches is number one. You search any top brand, you know, Tag Heuer watches, Breitling watches, whatever,
sure
they'll
enough.
Come up high.
Sure enough.
I'm going to make the statement that search engine placement is in place because of work Ken Giddens did 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Those pages are still there
mm-hmm.
because they're well-written pages, they get a lot of traffic, they have a lot of right links to it and everything.
Yeah.
And I say that that's there because Ken Giddens' work is because if you look at the other two companies that The company that bought us out is a company by the name of Odimo.
Mm-hmm.
They also have Diamond.com and Ashford.com,
okay.
both of which sell watches, diamonds, and jewelry.
Okay.
And Ashford sells luxury goods, you know,
okay.
burglary scarves and things like that. You won't find Diamond.com or Ashford.com anywhere, whether you search for watches, diamonds, jewelry, luxury goods, anything.
But you know what I do see?
You found Diamonds.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different company.
No, but what I do see, though, is World of Watches, which is coasting, let's say, on Ken's foundation,
uh-huh.
Is beating Swatch.
Oh, yeah.
Is beating Amazon.
Beating everybody.
Beating Citizen Watch, beating, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite remarkable.
Just
remarkable.
Beating everybody.
Well, that was a point he made when he was teaching, and he got very involved and active in teaching around 2003, and one of the points he always made to his students was longevity matters, so be patient.
Absolutely.
Lay a proper foundation.
Do it right.
Yeah, he's very big on that.
Well, you know, and that brings me around to a similar result he achieved 2 years ago at one of these companies that I helped put Ken in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
This is a company called LuggagePros.com.
Okay.
And, you know, they started, I helped start that business with the owner in 2002, and was able to convince Ken to take on another retailer. Ken was, you know, really was going off in another direction at that time, but he thought that, you know, sounded like a pretty good challenge with the luggage. He had never done luggage before, so he took the opportunity to do it. And, you know, they got up and running, and they've had a very nice run over the last couple of years. If you search for luggage on the Internet, you will find Luggage Pros. I think
they're
number five on Google.
Luggage. Okay, I see Luggage Online.
Yeah, that's one of their big competitors.
Okay. And they're up there, yeah, one, two. There are four right now.
Four.
Yeah.
And they have good, solid placement. If you search, what I always did, Ken, you know, I would try to search, like, my top five keywords and try to come up with a, you know, sort of a weighted ranking. And when you do that with Luggage Pros, they are the strongest in the luggage industry over several different terms. That Travel Pro Luggage, which is one of the big lines, you know, Discounted Luggage, and, you know, you look over different terms, and they are there.
But we found, too, that, and I'm sure you have as well, that when somebody is searching with greater specificity, you know, looking for a particular brand name or a particular
model.
Yeah,
they're model, more serious shoppers.
You're much closer to a sale than
you're
if they're putting
tootin'.
In. Yeah. So actually, while it's great to be number one for luggage, you get a lot of general traffic. There's nothing like having those keyword-specific
yep.
listings. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there are so many ways where retailers can sort of, you know, not maximize their search engine stuff that for someone that can, you know, you have such an advantage over the competition, and that was our advantage. I think that's, you know, one of Luggage Pros' advantages. But anyway, I was relating a story
yep.
About Luggage Pros. In they're cruising along. You know, it's November 2003. They're cruising along, doing pretty good. All of a sudden, they get a call. Bob, we've dropped off of Google. What happened? They dropped off of Google completely and totally.
Wow.
Uh-oh. So call Ken. Ken said, "Yeah, well, of course I know it. I guess maybe some of the stuff we had, you know, been trying, maybe they're slapping our hands or something." So I said, "Ken, you know, we got to find out. I mean, Luggage Pros is out of business basically if they're off Google in 2003. I think Google had a 80%, you know, search engine share
back yep,
then."
Yep.
And so I asked Ken to get in his car and drive down to San Francisco and see Google. He said, "Bob, you're out of your mind. That's a waste of day. I won't get in, and I don't want to do it anyway." So I said, "Ken, please." The only time I've ever asked Ken Giddens to do me a personal favor, you know, like, "Well, I'll give you $10,000, you know, the only time I'd ever asked him to do something for me, I asked him again, "Please, as a favor to me, or, you know, go down there and see if you can get in."
Mm-hmm.
Well, he calls me the next day, 2 days later, and said, "You know, I went down there and I hung around and didn't get in." Then this woman comes out; she's the head engineer on this, you know, on this segment of Google or whatever. And he said he talked to her for about a half an hour between, you know, with a 4-inch, solid glass separating them. I guess security is pretty high down there.
Uh huh.
And she let him know, you know, what the offenses were. And they were what he thought they were, but at least, you know, he knew. So he started a rewrite of, of Luggage Pros. And it took a while, of course, to come back online. I mean, Google didn't re-index them for probably another 60 days. And it affected to some degree their overall business for 2003. Mm-hmm. But the moral of the story, and relating back to what you said about the longevity of good search engine work, there's a fellow who works at Google who has a blog. His name is Matt Cutts. And we found this out, or the Luggage Pros guys found this out from Planet Ocean newsletter. And Matt Cutts has a blog where he talks, I guess with Google's sanction, about changes that Google is considering, making to their algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
And points out that Google, which has like 36 servers, four of them are test servers. So the World of Watches guys have this software where they can go and see each of Google servers where their pages rank and what the direction is, up or down.
Huh.
And on the four test servers, their direction is up,
uh-huh.
and the direction of all of their competitors is down.
Interesting.
So I asked the guys, why do you think that is?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I said, remember when Ken redid the pages in 2003 because you dropped off of Google?
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's a good search engine page that, even with Google's new, tested algorithm, the pages that Ken did right for you 2 years ago are going to shine, and everybody else's pages are going to wane.
Well, one of the things that Ken taught, and maybe he learned this from that visit at Google or from his experience or a combination.
I'm sure.
But that the more natural
yep.
a site was and the more natural
yep.
the links to and from it were, the better off you were.
Yep. And, he said, there's no substitute for starting out with a good, solid web page.
And one of the examples he likes to give is in the luggage area is eBags. Which I think is a very hugely funded company,
yes.
And you cannot find them in the free listings to save your life. They have to buy in a pay-per-click.
Well, I have a theory about how companies market on the internet. Think of a line, and a continuous line. At mm-hmm. one end of the line, or down towards one end, is the World of Watches model. We couldn't spend a a nickel. We didn't have a nickel to spend.
Uh-huh.
So we had to do everything more or less organically or self-grown or however you want to put it.
And you had to get it right.
And we had to get it right,
yeah.
And we happened to stumble upon a right formula, and that is search engine play. Search engine, search engine, search engine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was banners. Yes, there was pay-per-click. Yes, there were affinity marketing programs and all this stuff. Ken and I used to have this discussion, Bob, you really need to develop your marketing list and your newsletters and everything. And, hey, when the ducks are flying, they're flying because the search engine positioning is there.
Mm-hmm.
If you take out all that other stuff, you maybe have two fewer ducks flying. You take out the search engine, and you've got six ducks. It was just so much more important than any other kind of marketing to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, we did it that way, and I remember 1999, I calculated our customer acquisition cost. That was a metric that you heard bandied about all the time. Amazon, I think, in 99 had something like a $420 customer acquisition cost and everything.
So I sell a $20 book.
Customer acquisition, what is – oh, yeah, but they're going to get all the – then that guy's going to shop at Amazon for the rest of his life.
Yeah,
goes
they hope.
Story. Yeah. So I took the entire amount of money we had spent on marketing in 99. That was everything we paid Ken Giddens for search engine efforts. And I insisted that Ken's bills sort of be split out, web services, hosting, marketing services, stuff like that. Everything that he charged us based on marketing services. plus everything we spent on banners and whatever other programs we had, divided by the number of customers we had that year. And we had an $18 customer acquisition cost.
Wow. And a unit, a typical sale for you guys would be
$580.
$580.
Yeah.
So acquire a customer for 14?
18. You know, sell it for $580, and I don't want to say what our gross margin was. It wasn't great in watches, but there was gross margin there.
Yeah.
And it was more than $18 per customer.
Okay.
And the moral of the story, I was talking about, you know, that's one kind of company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of company that's, you know, just going to sit there and do business. There's not going to be a lot of press about the company and everything. They're not spending a lot of money in the marketplace. Then there's another kind of company. A competitor of ours went public in 99. This company started out as a company called newwatches.com, and then they became ashford.com.
Mm-hmm.
And these were some sharp operators. I mean, they were. You could tell right from their first website. I first noticed them in, I think, April of 98. And you could tell these guys were smart and aggressive. They had good pricing, nice website, all that stuff. They did very well. They went public in 99. And for a while, they had a market cap of $440 million in 99. This is a company that started after us,
uh-huh.
and as far as we could tell, was doing about as much sales as we were doing.
Right,
which in 99, you know, we were doing quite well.
Yeah.
Wasn't going to be $10 million, but it was going to be close
in
our third year.
Yeah.
So these guys were doing well, and we had to figure, okay, geez, they've got to figure it out to a better degree than we do. And they went public in 99. With that huge market cap, in either 99 or 2000, I can't remember the year, and I can't go to their 10K to show you this number, but I have the distinct memory that they did $40 million in sales
mm-hmm.
and lost $39 million.
Whoa.
Now, how does a company do that?
Wow.
Well, let's say you start. I mean, it's easy to do that if you're – if you have a lot of money, and
mm-hmm.
if you're spending that money on pay-per-click, I have a philosophy that, you know, the one of the worst things that could happen to a company is to get venture capital money. One of the worst things that could happen to the world of watches was if venture capitalists came to us and gave us $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do you do when you have money?
You spend it. Yep.
Whether you need to spend it or not.
Yep.
Obviously, World of Watches had a formula that, you know, based on our numbers, we didn't need to spend any more money.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had had money and spent it, we would have lost money in those years instead of made money.
You know, sometimes people on the other side of the divide of entrepreneurism, in other words, they haven't yet hit it. They haven't yet built a successful business. They're on their way, but they
mm-hmm.
haven't done it yet. When we talk about this, that actually having too much money can be a curse,
mm-hmm.
They think we're kidding. You know, but it's something that I've seen over and over and over again.
I think I can build a compelling argument with figures. I mean, from the World of Watches days, and I'm sure I can find the 10K on Ashford. Now, Ashford is now owned by the company that purchased us. I mean, they sold to Odimo, I think, in 2001
mm-hmm.
for a lot less than $400 million. As a matter of fact, for less money than World of Watches sold.
Wow. Is that a Japanese company, Odimo?
No, Odimo.
Oh, okay.
No, they're an American company.
Okay.
They're funded by they were heavily funded by SoftBank.
Okay, that's it. Which was a Japanese venture fund that specializes in.
Fallen on a lot of hard times, I guess. The company that bought us is another example. They've lost money every year since they've been in existence. I just looked up their third quarter reports. They're a public company now, so I can look that up.
Yep.
You know, they lost more money in the third quarter of this year than they lost last year. I mean, I'm not talking about losing a couple hundred thousand.
Right.
And it's the same philosophy as I mentioned. You don't find Ashford and Diamond.com on the search engine anywhere. But if you look on MSN's homepage, someday in the middle of December or something, you'll probably see a big spread for buy Burberry scarves at 25% off or something. And they'll sell a ton of scarves. They really will.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll pay a ton of money for that space, too. And once that space is gone, you have no residual beneficial effect from it. Whereas
mm-hmm.
with a search engine, you know, here Here they are 6 years later with World of Watch, a search engine placement, and they've paid nothing to anyone, you know, since they bought our company for that spot. So that's the value of search engines.
There's a fascinating book. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to see it or read it. It's by Gerardo Jaffe, and it's got a kind of a hypey name. It's How You Too Can Make At Least $1 Million, but probably much more in the mail order business. Basically, he started Haverhill's and a bunch of other catalog companies, and
mm-hmm.
his model was pretty straightforward: a lead item, usually small ad, and you'd get the catalog, and he'd build it. Anyway, the point is, he would build these businesses up, sell them to big corporations. The big corporations would tank them, and then he'd buy the trade name back and start all over from scratch.
Well, to be honest with you, we had a 5-year non-compete with Odeo, the three partners of World of Watches.
Uh-huh.
There was conversation, you know, several years ago that, I wondered if that World of Watches name was going to be available in, you know, 5 years. But I'm beyond that point in my life. I can't take that much excitement anymore.
I hear you. You know, it's interesting, the timing on this. We're conducting this interview on November 18th, 2005, and on November 12th, 2005, in the Financial Times, on page 4, there's a whole article about selling watches on the Internet.
No kidding.
Absolutely. In fact, I'll make sure that I send you a copy.
Cool.
And it talks about how hard it is and how you have to develop trust. And apparently, this, just so you'll really appreciate this company called Goldsmiths, which over in England I think is the equivalent of Tiffany's,
mm-hmm.
has finally gotten on the web this year.
Uh-huh.
They're very proud of themselves, and I believe they're bragging that they're selling 15 watches a day. This merits page 4 in the Financial Times. They also talk about a guy named Tom Bolt, who started something called the Watch Guru in 98, and they're saying
I'm aware of the Watch Guru.
Yeah, and they're saying that he was the first to sell watches on the internet. Well,
no,
I don't think so.
No.
So we're correcting that history. But I'll clip this and send it to you. I thought it was an amazing
comment. I mean, the Watch Guru may have been out there, but when I started searching back in 96,
yeah.
there were companies. I think this one is still out there today. Wristwatch.com,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what they're doing activity-wise. I think their activity is way down. There was a company called, there's your AAAs. You had AAA Jewelers, AAA Watches, AAA Watch.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of originality in there.
Uh-huh.
There was KC Jewelers. A lot of people, you know, selling watches without the word watches in their URL. I always thought that was interesting. Yeah, it was. I don't remember Watch Guru. He did come on. I remember when I first became aware of him back in maybe 98 or so.
That's when this article says he started.
Yeah, but I mean Watch Guru. He was like, okay, I got 3 watches in stock this week. I can sell, you know, or
right.
something like that. Or at least that's my recollection.
Right. Well, I'm gonna send a copy of this interview to the guy that wrote this article for the Financial Times. And, but hey, no one can know everything. But it's just a great coincidence. So. You said something earlier when we were talking before the interview about you actually didn't spend that much physical time in the same room with Ken during all this.
No, I've been with Ken maybe 10 days in my entire life, 10, 20 days.
And yet you guys built this huge enterprise on the Internet together. So this was really an example of what they used to call a virtual corporation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then in 99, our business got so much that I could no longer run the call. Logistically, it was going to be a nightmare with the call center being in Minnesota, and we were actually faxing the orders to Florida. So I moved the call center down to Florida in August of 99. But I mentioned earlier, I gave you some flavor for how our business was ramping up. I'm going to pick a week. This is like... what's a good week to pick here? Okay, the second week in June. Our first Ken website went live third week in June of 98.
Okay.
Second week in June, before it went live, we did $48,000.
Okay.
Now, first weekend's website was up. You know, usually your business is going to go down because you're going to have glitches and everything. We did $71,000.
Wow.
Now, that was a bit of an aberration. I mean, that's perhaps graduation. I mean, that was the biggest week we had until, you know, for the next 2.5 months. But anyway, So in week two, June, we went from 48,000 to 98, 99, and this is when 97's numbers I don't have. I'm guessing, you know, maybe we did $10,000, you know, 97.
That would be in a week.
Yeah, in a week. And then 48. Then in 99, 137,000 versus 48. So that was 184% increase.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2000, we did over $250,000 in that week. So, and that was a 65% increase on top of the 98 increase, which was 184,000.
And this was just this was not the day, week before Christmas.
That was June week two.
Okay,
I mean, this is watches. I mean, it's not like people are buying their diamonds engagement ring for their June wedding or something like that. We didn't sell engagement rings, and people buy them before the week before the wedding.
So
I mean, this is watches.
Incredible.
But we did usually have a little bit of a bump, generally in May because of Father's Day and graduation. I mean, a lot of people buy watches. But this is June week, too. What's going on?
Right. June in fact, everyone's all spent out probably by then.
So, that's an example of the kind of growth we had pre-Ken and post-Ken. The amazing thing to me is that the growth after Ken, having a mathematical background, I know it's dangerous to look at percentage increases because it's so easy to come by a percentage increase when you're starting from a small base. But as that base gets bigger, it gets a lot harder to put 200% and 300% increases on the board.
I'm sure
but we continued with a really, really healthy growth, from when Ken took over till the day we sold the company. And I still maintain today that one of the reasons we were able to sell the company is the volume we were pumping out. And that's largely, I mean, you have to give Ken Giddens, a really big piece of that credit.
And then, all these years later, the company that bought World of Watches is still making money because of Ken's work.
Absolutely.
Because of his search engine placement.
Absolutely. And I got to believe, I don't know whether they would probably disagree with me 100%, but I got to believe with the search engine placement they have on World of Watches that they, the cost of their doing business under the World of Watches brand has got to be a heck of a lot less than it is under the other brands they're doing. That's all I'll say.
Well, I noticed they're not. They don't need to buy a single pay-per-click. They're getting very good.
They'd rather sell jewelry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
There's more gross margin in jewelry.
Okay.
So
the watches are just to get people in and.
Yes, but, I don't think so. I think you can make your bread and butter off of watches. I think it's a lot harder to sell a diamond tennis bracelet. See, one of my partners had a very astute statement. He said, let's not get to thinking that we're internet geniuses here. He said, we had a product that was absolutely, positively the perfect product to sell on the internet. And we sold it at a time when it was absolutely, positively the perfect time to sell it on the internet because it was the go-go 90s. You've heard the term power tie, a nice big red
tie.
A guy could go into a meeting and, he takes charge because he's got a power tie. I heard guys use the phrase power watch. I need a power watch. And these guys would consistently buy a certain Tag Heuer, 6,000, 18 karat gold and stainless steel, a $2,200 watch or something. These were salesmen who, wanted to, look flashy.
Yep.
There was a lot of that. And if you were to take that same business today, just from the standpoint of the economy, I got to believe that the average sale price is down. I mean, I was always astounded that our average sale price was as high as it was. Lost track.
Yeah, but on the other hand, though, the volume of sales and the number of people online and the level of comfort in buying, making online transactions is way up over 2,000.
Yep. Well, plus, I have to assume that if World of Watches were operating under us today, that we'd have a much higher than 33% incidence of online orders. I got to think that's closer to a half to two-thirds of our orders would be online. So, there's a lot of good things to running the business today, but it's that'd be a lot harder too. I don't know.
Maybe
I'm all wet.
Well, but hey, you were there, and you've given us a great portrait of what it was like to build businesses in that time, in this particular business. We learned how Ken Giddens evolved through that period from being basically a web designer to getting involved in search with your prodding.
And then he went on so far beyond search engines that, you know, he was into, he would talk to me for hours about guerrilla marketing and all, you know, all this stuff. And it was fascinating, but it's like, you know, I don't think we have the World of Watches didn't really have the time to spend it. I think we got to a point where, you know, we were so focused on just give us the search engine placement, and keep the website up and running that, you know, after a while, I don't think we were able to fuel Ken's thirst for knowledge anymore. I think we got to a point where we started holding him back in his quest for learning more.
And he was absolutely voracious for internet knowledge.
Absolutely.
I'd say.
He'd get frustrated with me that I didn't want to try this, that, or the other thing. It's like, you know, it's not going to give us that big of a bang. So,
yeah.
But he was the consummate consultant. You know, he would hear, you know, the business owner, you know, say, nope, I've made a decision, and then, okay, he's off that, and he's back on the topics that, you know, the business owner wants to focus on. Believe me, I know that's tough for a consultant to do because I have a real hard time doing that.
Especially someone with Ken's mindset. You know, he's just so expansive.
Yep.
And he got
and all his ideas were good. I mean, I couldn't ever, you know, point to an idea where it's, you know, Ken, that's a pretty crummy idea. It's just, you know, I don't want to take away my effort from, you know, selling watches to do that. I don't think it's a big enough bang.
Yeah. Hey, well, Bob Lang, I want to thank you so much for spending this time to give us your recollections of Ken Giddens and his work and his life. And this is the second in a three-part series. The next interview will be with some of the people that worked with Ken in an educational setting in 2003 and 4 and this year. And this was certainly a remarkable person, one of a kind. It's a cliche, but they definitely broke the mold when they made Ken. I've been doing this since '93, and he's of the thousands of people that I've met and read about and heard about. He's in my book way up there with the very best people in this medium, and we all miss him.
Yep.
Terribly. So Bob, if you'd hang out after this call, I'll get your address so I can send you this stuff.
Okay.
And that's the end of our interview. This is Ken McCarthy interviewing Bob Lang about the life and career of Ken Giddens from the period roughly of 1997, would we say, or six?
98 through 2001. Actually, I've worked with Ken all along with these other companies, but not in a real hard sense.
Okay.
That's great. Well, thank you, Ken.
Great. And don't go away.
I'll stay.
I'm just going to stop the recording, and thank you. Bye-bye.